Welcome everyone to Cowcast episode 4, special edition DC Rebirth. My name is Eric, and I'm just going to be kicking off this episode with a little introduction and basically letting it run itself out. So what we're going to be talking about or listening to in this podcast is the unfiltered, unedited version of the retailer roadshow that DC put on that James and I kind of did a little bit of a recap on last episode. What you're going to hear is the excitement that Jim and Dan have. There's going to be times where it may be tough to hear, especially for Jim. He's a little bit softer spoken, so I'll apologize in advance for that. But I tried to clean the audio up as much as possible to make it easier for you to hear. I think you'll find it kind of interesting to hear their different takes on the different components that make up the DC universe. They're different pieces that they see as struggling or needing to improve, and their overall take on what Rebirth really is. There will also be a little bit of discussion about the Gerard Way Young Animals imprint, as well as talking about the Hanna-Barbera characters. And it should culminate in a fairly well-rounded understanding for you of what we got to hear when we were there. I did cut out the Q&A section on the end because a lot of that had to do with more retailer-specific stuff that's probably not very interesting for most of you. So hopefully you enjoy this recording, and we'll let it play out here in just a second.
This is the fun part. This is the one that we get the most excited about. At least I get the most excited about. We have a lot of things we want to cover. We're going to go into the... we still have to explain a little more about Rebirth and a lot of plans behind there, but one of the things we decided to do when we were going to Rebirth, you'll see it as we start to unfold it, and you probably realize we're really trying to focus primarily on core line, key characters, and really trying to build out a lot of the franchises in a way that most people recognize them and have a sense of familiarity, and so therefore we really keep our base very strong. But we do want to keep on pushing out diversity and different styles of product, because we know there's new audience out there, and we're always trying to bring them in through different ways. So one of the things that's happened, and from my standpoint, this is something that's really exciting. When I first got to DC Comics, I loved all the Hanna-Barbera characters, loved all that stuff, and we had the chance to do a mini-series with Ariel Olivetti and Joe Kelly, which was Space Ghost. Beautiful Alex Ross Covers, beautiful book, sold incredibly well for us. And then lo and behold, after we did our first mini-series, we were set to do more with other characters, we're ready to build it out, and lo and behold, our consumer product department at Marvel said stop. Doesn't make enough money for the company, no sense to do it. So they stopped us from doing it. But it's always been a big passion of ours, and we know there's a lot of interest in these characters from our fans, and we know that they had success with other companies over the years. So always chasing after it, and now we flash forward to this year, when Diane Nelson, our boss, was put in charge of consumer products. She knew about the interest, and then she came over, as I love to tell the story, one day with a big, thick phone book of characters, about this thick, dumped it on the desk and said, "This is all the Hanna-Barbera characters, have fun." And at that moment, we knew we were in fun game. So we knew we were able to do something really grow these things and push them out. So we went out and we looked through the four ideas, and we really wanted to expand, not just take these things and do it as you're seeing as the regular shows, but really try to find ways to reinvent them a little bit, get them to find new ways to tell stories, and really take advantage of the fan base there, but really launch them in new directions. So we have four new series coming, built off the Hanna-Barbera brand that we feel very strong about. Scooby Apocalypse. Okay, Scooby-Doo, one of my favorite characters, has a 50-year heritage in television, in comics, and everywhere else, but we knew that there was a fan base there that might just not be interested in the regular Scooby stuff that we do, so we wanted to find a new book. And then we find out that there's one big fan of Scooby-Doo inside the building, and I'm going to turn it over to that fan, Mr. Jim Lee.
Yeah. Look, I think it's safe to say that we're all Scooby fans, but it was a huge part of my growing up, and it was very cool to be able to work on this project and get to work with Keith Kiffin. Essentially, we wanted to take the Scooby characters and do an origin story. I don't think there's ever been an origin story that I remember from cartoons. And then also take that time to kind of update the characters that have been around, as Dan said, for like 50-some odd years. And then today, that's the kind of stuff we do. We world building, we take a look at characters that have been around for 75 plus years and try to introduce something new and different. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but that's the great thing about comics is that it's you can take those shots and they don't work, you can quickly rebound. It's not like you're spending $100 million on a big motion picture. So we wanted to do something really fun and kind of play off the real premise of the TV show, which is something really does happen that is not popular. It's not a guy with a rubber mask that's just staring at kids. And so basically the Lord and Sterling characters come together at Burning Man, and that kind of launches the series. And you'll see that they all have been transformed just a little bit, but at the end of the day, they still have a lot of the visual things, the visual elements that they're known for from the scars. So the long scars for Fred. And I mean, the first issue is amazing. I just read it last night. And you know, if you look at Scooby, he's got this, like, he's cybernetically augmented, and so he's able to communicate with Shaggy and Velma, these emoticons that kind of float out of the bottom of his head. So there's a lot of different things that we've added to the mythology, and actually that's how the board is designed for Mr. Machine, and again, a very different kind of Mr. Machine, but it plays very much into the essence of origin of the characters, and they have this grand quest that they have to save humanity, and it all starts to make a little bit.
Now wait, first of all, two things I have to say. First one is that Jim's fighting for a really bad cold, so when you have questions, make sure you direct them all to him. Okay? So that keeps it interesting. The other thing, I just want to go back for a second on Mr. Machine. How many guys ever saw Damnation Alley? I always like to ask this question. You remember that? The band? It just captured all that type of fun, and I think that's the type of world you're going to see in this film too. And also to answer the other question that's always asked, that, so now we're answering before you ask it. Yes, we're continuing regular Scooby-Doo kids book, and yes, we're continuing Scooby-Doo team up too. So this is just an addition, hopefully with a different audience, but we're expecting hopefully a nice big crowd to build on from here too. So, again, it's more stuff in. This is some very numbers along with it for the first issue. You got Howard Korn on Scooby, Dan Joji on Shaggy, Joel Jones on Daphne, Ben Colwell on Velma, and Neil Adams on Fred. So a lot of fun stuff, a lot of things, and what's great about these Hanna-Barbera characters is that I keep on saying this, and I always have to say this too, forgive me if I feel like, we start to feel like we're repeating ourselves, we've done a few of these things, so you gotta keep on stopping, I think I said something, but I know I didn't. But the great part about this is that when we announced all the Hanna-Barbera material, pretty much we were contacted with so many great talent, because these are things that they remembered and loved so much that they want to get back and really enjoy it. So again, fun stuff that happened with Scooby, again, healthy book, and it's coming out May 25th for the first issue. There's a lineup, that's good.
Yeah, so those are comic covers that are designed based off the cover I did from some of the covers. And as you see, he's taking a pretty realistic approach to characters. And it's fantastic.
There you go, and that's Jim's second cover. And I think you should say more than that. Actually, you were definitely involved in the creation of the story too. I mean, it's not just about covers, it's really, this has been a
public role. Yeah, Keith and I really sat down and came with the original concept of it all. And why the characters come together, and the ultimate quest that they have, and what we find out is that she's they all have a character arc, which is something that I don't know if ever really existed in the original show, and that they all come to Burning Man missing something in their lives, and when they come together, it's a lot of people in their lives, they kind of go on this train, and they're very accomplished things that make them feel more complete.
Next up is the Flintstones. Again, this is one of those other books that we really want to find a way to reimagine in today's audience. People know the characters so well, there's a couple of feature films with them, but we really want to launch our own take on this series. So we brought in the writer Mark Russell, who did the series Prez. He has a real great satirical look of the world and sensibilities. He has a great comedic voice, but he also is able to attract group-minded issues and really contemporary issues. And we think that it works out perfectly within Flintstones. And his whole purpose is that, his whole sense is that all the problems and ills of the world start with the Flintstones. They basically did it all, and we're all suffering from it still. So there's a lot of fun stuff that happens in the Flintstones. A lot of great new and original designs by Annette Conner. Then we brought Steve Newman, as he said, Steve's art. Steve's having a wonderful time with us too. And I think, again, it's a book that has a point of view, it has a personality, it works on multiple levels. I think kids can enjoy it, but I think parents will get the second type of entendre and type of stories that we get from there. A lot of, very similar to what you would see in a Looney Tunes cartoon or something along those lines. Again, three more Mary covers coming up. You've got Walt Simonson, Dustin Nguyen, but here's my personal favorite, which is Ivan Rice's cover. As you can see, the little bird that's actually making the picture up there is actually doing a nice homage to the original interpretation of Flintstones. And I think that's a beautiful way to work that original design in, but really continue going forward in new directions. This is the lineup, I see you. And again, we want to get very particular about this too. As you notice, we really positioned Pebbles and Bam Bam as tweens. I think that was very important to do that because the tween years of Pebbles and Bam Bam, you must know by now, have never been fully explored. We've seen them as full children, we've seen them as teenagers, but the tween years are really going to be interesting in the formative years of Pebbles and Bam Bam. Obviously, hairstyles were not their specialty, but I think we're going to have some fun with these characters going forward. Ah, good to my pajamas. He's making fun of me, by the way. I do this and he makes fun of me afterwards. So anyway, okay, so this is one of my particular labors of love. You know, for everybody, for everybody who's ever watched cartoons from 8:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock in the afternoon on ABC in the 60s, I'm not sure there's a few of you still here, right? There's a few of you. Okay, there you go. This is literally the lineup of ABC Saturday morning cartoons, all together in a single book. What's great about this is we've seen series with Johnny Quest, we've seen series with Space Ghost, we've seen a lot of these series, but what we've done is we've put these characters in a single story. So you have Johnny Quest, Space Ghost, the Herculoids, Galaxy Trio, Birdman, Frankenstein Jr., Mitor, and the Impossibles. So many great characters in a single book. And again, what we want to do is really take something that is familiar to our audience, that action adventure sense, some familiarity with these characters, but be able to push these books and characters into a single story that we haven't seen before, and hopefully attract an excited audience with this. Again, plays to our strengths, but in a completely different style and a new way. We've got Jeff Parker writing, we've got Doc Chan on the art, we've also got Steve Root joining us as well to help fill in some of the stuff. So it's been a beautiful looking series, and it's come together in a great way. These are our first draft with a very covers on it. You've got Steve Root in the corner, Herculoids done by Aaron Preston, Bill Sienkiewicz doing Space Ghost, and Joe Pignon is doing the team shot down there. A lot of fun stuff. Again, what's great about these books is we're able to attract so much great talent because they have true love to these characters, and when you read the material, you see that same love on the page. Beautiful Doc Chamberlain. As I say, Bandit has never looked more serious, more intent. I mean, if you want to see a book or see anything with the dog ready for action, Bandit is the one. I mean, you can see Scooby, you know, that whole cybernetic thing, but Bandit doesn't need it. He's the dog. See, look, right there, Bandit. Is that a dog you want leading the charge or not? And you go, that's a great Doc Chamberlain, just showing you all the different crazy animals we exhibited in our little world here. Okay, and this is the weird one. The other one is not weird enough. This is the fun one for us. If you look at Scooby-Apocalypse is a combination of say, Scooby-Doo and Walking Dead, then we're looking at Wacky Races as being an odd mix of Wacky Races and Mad Max. Again, trying to take some of these ideas, recreate them, and reinvent them in a way that really gets people excited. So even if you didn't know what the Wacky Races were, you can have some fun looking at this. The art is by Leonardo Monaco, I guess you've seen he's done a lot of work for us in Vertigo and other areas. I think he did Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So he has a really dark and style to it, but I think it works perfectly for this book. The writer is Ken Pontac. Ken's a writer that I work with in animation. He created a show called Bump of the Night back for ABC Saturday Morning in the Day, but he also did Happy Tree Friends, which shows you about the widest range that you can do in regards to storytelling, and he finds ways to touch upon the sympathetic, the sensitive, as well as the crazy role in this particular series. If you haven't recognized the characters, the dog in the front is actually Muttley from the Dastardly Muttley days. I think we've done a nice, interesting reinvention of the character that really works for the series. You see a lot of the familiar Wacky Races characters in here in ways you've never seen them before. Maybe there's Muttley there. I guess he could get Bandit or Wacky Races money. You know, we're really focused on, you know, strong dogs in the universe. These kind of warriors. That's Penelope Pinstop's car. Keep going, and that's Penelope Pinstop herself, ready for war. And the interesting thing about it is, oh my God, you know, a big question asked me is this a book that plays for kids to play a little bit younger, can it play older? We say yes. And the reason why is that the theme behind the story is an interesting one. The thought is that we're in a post-apocalyptic world, it's a wasteland. And there is a utopia that everybody wants to get to, but only one person get in. So the race is designed to get that one person to utopia. Only the winner can get in. But the only way the winner can get in is that every car has to survive the race. They can't turn at each other, they can't kill each other, they can't do anything. They have to work together as a unit to be able to go through the entire race, but only one can get in at the end. So there's a really interesting dynamic taking place. They're all trying to outdo each other, but they know each other how to survive. So there's always a story where they're showing how to come together, how the team works. But of course, Dick Dastardly, we'll see in a second, Dick Dastardly has problems of his own, doesn't like working in teams, so therefore he's always causing problems. So they find themselves in situations where they've got to help him, save him, in order for all of them to be able to make the conclusion. So it's fun stuff, and that's why I can raise that. Nope, that's it. That brings us through. Those are the Hanna-Barbera books. So, again, a little different, a lot more fun, but again, it's showing ways that we can spread out a line, attract different people with stuff like this, and that's the way we'd like to grow. But this is the only way we're going to be expanding out. We're also going to try something new with DC's Young Animals, and I'll turn that to you.
Sure. So, how many of you guys are familiar with Gerard Way? He's a frontman, right? Robin Craig. So, yeah, you guys know he's a former frontman for the My Chemical Romance, writer, creator of Umbrella Academy for Dark Horse. He's also a huge, huge DC fan. He actually did a DC intern back in the early 2000s, doing an art school at SVA, and he's always had a soft spot for DC characters. So he actually came in, because he's local, and he looked through this encyclopedia of DC characters, and he wanted to spent some time away from music for about a couple of years and really focused on just comics writing. He wanted to specifically focus on a project for DC. And if you know his music and you know kind of his message, you know that it's not going to be the traditional superhero kind of material. And so we really kind of gave him that. We said, well, why don't we pick some eclectic characters? And we built sort of a mini, what we call a pop-up imprint. It's basically an imprint that emerges because of his interest, his desire, his passion for these characters. And we'll continue to do it for as long as he wants to run this imprint. And so he came up with four titles, one of which he's writing and one he's co-writing. But they all share kind of a similar tonality. They all speak to kind of alienation, living on the fringe, and how you can kind of save yourself through creativity or love or passion. I think these are things he addresses in his music, and so it's not surprising to see that reflected in the world itself. And to us, it's a nice blend of kind of old vertigo in terms of tonality and creator first approach to comic book making and a combination of DCU. These characters are going to exist in the DC universe, albeit on the fringe of continuity. And they almost have a continuity that runs through the four books themselves, but they are part of the DCU and they are a mature audience. And we're really encouraging him to take a very different approach because we know that his audience is predominantly male, younger, a different audience altogether. He's got millions of followers on Twitter and Instagram. And we really expect this to break out in a big way amongst people that don't necessarily traditionally read and follow comics. So, here are the four books. First up is Duke Reader, which is working with Nick Barrington. And Gerard is a big fan of what Grant Morrison did in the book. And so he really wanted to do a take on the series that took what Grant had done and continued it. So it doesn't contradict anything that came before it. At the same time, it's a nice jumping off point for people who aren't familiar with the series. As you see, Flux Metallo part of the group. And they're doing a very kind of oddball take on it, and this is true to the premise of the series itself. Changing Girl, the changing from the Changing Man, written by Cesar Castellucci, who kind of played the game for Mates way back in the day, drawn by Marlon Zarcone. And this story is it's an alien in shape that basically inhabits a girl that's in a coma. And then when the girl comes to, I realize that this girl, no one's really happy that she's back because she's actually the community bully. She's a horrible bully. And so this character, Shade, basically has to deal with a true alienation, literal alienation that the character's an alien, but also social alienation that she comes back in the form of someone that is really an outcast in society, and she has to kind of find her way back into society and deal with how her life has changed. And I think, you know, it's a metaphor for the teenage years and growing up, and again, one of the very musical songs.
This one? Oh, I love this one. Okay. That's actually the title of the book. Kate Carson has a cybernetic eye. And what happened was that Troy Wayne building the line. When Troy's building the line, basically he was looking at a different book. He went through the DC Encyclopedia, looking for all the obscure characters, what's going in there. So he came across Kate Carson, never heard of him before, and he reads the line of description from Kate Carson. It says, literally all it says in the encyclopedia, speedlunger, kung fu expert, has a cybernetic eye. Okay? And we all went, has a cybernetic eye, how can that be? So we literally went through every Cave Carson appearance to find out where he got that cybernetic eye, and guess what we found? That story hasn't been told until now. And this is the one everybody's been waiting for, obviously. This is what we needed to do, and so we went out and found a way to tell the story of Cave Carson and the cybernetic eye, but Jim describes it the best.
Look, it's like the movie Hangover. You wake up and you find out you have a cybernetic eye, and you don't know why do I have a cybernetic eye? Where did it come from? How did I get here? And so they basically kind of go through and find out the cybernetic eye might have belonged to someone else. It has its own sentience, it has its own agenda, it stores images. And so they're really leaning into that and having a lot of fun with the mystery of the cybernetic eye. And it's a weird character. We were looking through the other day when Joy was in the office just.
Yesterday.
And just looking at old covers, and like, old cover's got beer, the next cover, no beer. It's just a wacky character. So, we're trying to solve these kind of embarrassing, kind of hungry gaps.
Which I know has been troubling all of you, obviously. It's clear this is something that needed to be addressed, and we're getting to it right now. And you know, for me personally, this is the stuff that I enjoy about DC. You know, I mean, you really love your Superman and Batman stories, but it's those crazy corners, those crazy, quirky characters on the edges, the ones that come alive for me. And when I see things like Kate Carson and Doom Patrol coming back, again, you know, for people that it harkens some people back to the early days of Vertigo, to me it brings me back to all that I love about DC Comics. Just the real strange edges and just that almost like a stream of consciousness style writing and creation that went on there. But I mean, so many great characters that people know today.
So of the four, this is actually a creator only. This is a new character that Gerard has created. It's going to be drawn by Tommy Edward, John Hall-Mero, and Sean Crystal, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So this is written by newcomer Jamie Hauser, who's done some work with Valley. This premise is essentially what if Courtney Love were a cybernetically augmented addict fighting crime. And so it's a character who's a member of high society in Gotham City, that fights the underbelly of people that you know, heirs to create fortunes. And, you know, one of the fun things that we have when Jar comes in is we're talking about how ways to do this line and market it and sell it in different ways. And he wants to do a little, what was it called? Ashcan. You know, Ashcan. And we're talking about, well, maybe we should hire Jose Garcia Lopez to do the 1960s. Fake cover of another man, and we'll print the comic book in blank inside of a slab, and we'll put it on the marketplace, and it'll look like a comic book from like the 70s. Just to kind of like mess with people and just kind of have fun with the material and the whole fact that, you know, no one really knows the entire history of everything, and that's the fun part of what he's doing, is really going in and digging into deep and pulling out these C-level, B-level characters and trying to really elevate them to great interest. So, Mother Panic was awesome. It's very evocative, very dramatic topic. And again, it's the first R-rated book since Gotham City.
And again, when we put all these four books together, it shows you the type of range we're trying to bring to the overall line. Because it's interesting, when people talk about DC Comics, they just think about the Supergirl line directly. That's all they talk about. And they don't realize that we as publishers are overseeing so much wide diversity of product. And when you look at things like Young Animals on the Vertigo line, creator own stories, or what we're doing with Hanna-Barbera, we're trying to spread out our product line in ways that we can attract different audiences. Because mainly is that we see what the audience is out there right now, we see it's changing, it might not be huge and large, so by creating these little pockets of books where they can test and invest, we might be able to lure them in to bring them in and try more product going forward. But that's our line right now, and we have one. character for young animals is Comics for Dangerous Humans, and we're having a lot of fun with that. And the goal is to see and bring a level of enjoyment back to a lot of storytelling and types of stories that we do, and see if we can bring people in with some of the energy that's going to be in these series going forward. So, okay, that's Panama Bear and Young Animals. Now, I think we're ready to go. Let's go into Right into Rebirth. Does that make sense, guys? Okay. Everybody, any bathroom breaks? Anybody okay? Anybody want hummus? Anybody? Hummus? Hummus? Okay, we're all hummus now. Good, okay, good. Let's go right into it, Adam.
Until they're gone and they're not coming back. And that's a scary moment because you don't know whether or not
by the size of your audience is going to be enough to support what you do. And so we got to take a good, long, hard look at our line and say, what can we get ourselves back on track? So we spoke to a number of retailers, we spoke to different people, and we started to get an idea. And we realized that all the changes that we were making to the franchises were just so much that people were losing the connection to them. They were losing their identifiability. You know, back in a robot suit lasted too long, Superman and jeans didn't win people over. Nothing was feeling comfortable to anybody. And all the changes that we were doing to get people excited were actually turning them off. So ultimately, we sat down and we brought Jeff Johns in, who's been so instrumental in getting the TV shows up and running, and everything in nature of everything going on with our characters, and that's just a deep understanding of every character, and said, how do we get this back on track? So what we did is we sat down and we looked at every book and every franchise. You know, and we went to Conexpert a couple of months ago, and one of the things that was said to us is that those bottom books you do are just dead before they arrive. You know, why do we even waste your time making them? Nobody wants them. So that convinced us that we doubled down on our better selling books, spend more energy on the books that people want, more time and put those out. We know it's easier to sell two Batman books than a Batman and a Gotham by Midnight. As much as I love Gotham by Midnight, we know that if you put out Batman twice, there's a better chance for you to have better sales. So now instead of doing Gotham by Midnight as a series, we just do that story inside Batman, where it has a better chance to be found and a better chance to grow an audience. But we put a lot of time and energy into what we're doing here because we understood that your success is our success. And our failure is your failure. So ultimately, we have to find a way to work with you and find a way to improve this. And that's why we're here talking these things directly to you. Because here's the most interesting thing we found in all this crazy market research that every company does, everywhere. You know, they give you all these statistics, which mean something to somebody. But the one statistic we heard over and over again is that the store is the single best place for a fan to find out about a comic. They don't find out online. They don't find out in previews. They find out from you, directly. And if you're not excited about what we do, then you're not going to pass that information to anybody else. So our job today is to get you excited about our comics, again. And the way we're doing that is by going back to looks and styles and tonalities that you remember and love. Things that you get excited about with DC Comics, and that excitement will make it over to the fans, and hopefully it turns into a purchase, and we can rebuild what we feel is a wonderful franchise of characters. But we can't do it without you. Simple as that. We can't. We've got to do this together. So everything we're going to be talking about is, how can we better service you? How can we give you a better product? How can we help you sell your books? And more importantly, how can we excite you about what we're doing again? Rewin your confidence, your faith in us. So therefore, that confidence faith will be shared with everybody who enters your store. It's an important time for us right now. You know, I was doing some math that was interesting to see, and I don't know how you do it. You get about 400 monthly titles, right? About 400 books every month, periodicals. I don't know if there's enough talent to support that. I don't know if there's enough fans to support that, but that's a lot of things, and you have to determine what the best books are. And our books are an anchor, or should be an anchor in your stores. It's what's familiar. So if everything else seems confusing to everyone, they know where to go, where they can know something that they could expect. It's like going to your favorite channel on cable when you go through 500 channels, and you just watch that rerun that you love so much. You know, me, I'm watching Columbo for 500 channels, and I've seen those episodes about 20 times. Just the way it works. And I want people to feel that way, that they come back to us because they're going to get something they truly enjoy with DC Comics. So we're rebuilding our line to get people comfortable, familiar, and excited about DC again, and a place to go in this crazy morass of books that is out there right now. That's our job right now, and we've got to be better. So we got back to a lot of core principles, we got back to a lot of core ideas, and we're going to take you through all the titles, and hopefully you'll see what we're trying to accomplish. And you know what? We're open to take questions along the way, too. Okay? Let's go. Straight up, you start.
All right. So this is the first, it really kicks off Rebirth. It's just May 25th. It's the DC Universe Rebirth number one. This is an interesting book because it's about, it's an 80-page comic that's going to sell for $2.99. If there's a second printing, it's going to be $5.99. So we really encourage you guys to worry deep on this. Some stores are actually giving away people that subscribe to the Rebirth launch. So it's kind of interesting to see how people are using this marketing tool. But this is the kickoff. This book has at least 6 or 7 different storylines that paint off in the actual books themselves, and it really sets up a big, bigger story that will run through the DC image for about a year, year and a half. And I think there's a number of reasons, a number of things that differentiate Rebirth from New 52. Number one, it's not a reboot. Okay? This is actually taking the New 52 and seeding it within the continuity of pre-New 52. It's figuring out ways to make the New 52 essentially an extension of that timeline. And this book really explains how and sets up the mystery of why. And I think Jeff has some stuff in here that will be the single most controversial thing that DC has ever published. And
in a good way, though.
Yes,
a story.
Yes,
a story.
We don't put that out where we
do it. Yeah, no, that's
So there's stuff in here that deals with characters that come back, and that's also another big part of Rebirth, is that when we launched New 52, we really threw out a lot of elements that kind of define DC, you know, those legacy generations, you know, sidekicks, characters that exist before Superman. And a lot of those things are going to return, but they're not just going to return out of the blue, they're going to return if there's any reason why, which again ties into the bigger story, which I just said about.
One of the other thing too is that again, these stories, you know, if you remember back when I first got here, we did Countdown Taking the Crisis, the dollar book, 80-page book, you know, which launched into all the storylines that got us taking the crisis all there. That's still one of my favorite periods of time working at DC Comics. I feel this thing captures that same level of energy, and hopefully sets up the storylines. And that's what we're gonna keep on reiterating, the fact that Jeff's been working with the writers, really discussing not just about what's in their stories, but also what's at the heart of the characters, that clear understanding of who they are. You know, one of the biggest problems we had during the course of 52 is that, you know, when we changed teams or when teams changed, there was a very poor handoff of storytelling. The new talent team came in, they basically ignored what came before, they basically came out and tried to do something different, and it left all the audiences feeling disenfranchised. The readers felt like they invested in the story and now there's no pickup to that, there's no follow-through. But what's happening with this book is the complete opposite. We're starting with a story here that we know can map out a course for the DC Universe over a couple of years. That's not, and by the way, that is not one single story across every book, not at all. It just gives you an overlay of what the DC Universe can be and tell, and ultimately gives us basically a point for the line and a direction for the line, which I think is very important because it's not just about continuity, about how all the stories fit together. It's about consistency in the character's behavior from book to book. It's so important that if Wonder Woman appears in one book, she should act and behave the same way in another book. Everybody has to understand what's at the core of the character, what makes them work, how they talk, how they act, and reinforce that from every appearance, because I think that's what really builds the universe out, and that's something that we are very much staying on top of to make sure there's a level of consistency for the character's behaviors from title to title.
Superman.
Which was that?
The one
with four
packs.
Oh, exactly. Okay. Thank you, Steve. In this particular case, unfortunately, because of the timeline and where we're at, and honestly, guys, one of the things we had to do, because of what's in this book, we had to really compress our timelines. Because I know a lot of people came up and say, why didn't you want to do this for Free Comic Book Day? This feels like a Free Comic Book Day idea. And actually, it is to a point, but the reality is that because of what's happening in the story, and we're trying to keep this under wraps as much as possible, Free Comic Book Day is on such a different accelerated schedule that book had to be done in February, and we wanted to make sure we had everything fully in place, and we needed those extra months to make sure this book was as good as it could be. And I think when it lands in your hands, you understand why the artists on board on this are Ethan Van Sciver, Phil Jimenez, Gary Frank, and Ira Rice, and you want to make sure you take your time to get those pages correct with those guys. But also, as you see here, because of this, it's not on our same, which means this has to be ordered today. hence the reason why we're doing these last road shows today, just to push that out. Again, okay? Okay?
You still advance pre-order and do all that, but
The other thing too is because of the orders, also just to let you know, because of, you'll hear about returnability and things of that nature a little bit later, and what I'm going to say about that is that we really want to work with you by making these books returnable, but also just because of that though, we won't be having deep overruns and we won't have many overages on these things. So you gotta have to understand that when we're doing this and when we make them available, these books, we won't be able to have as much holding in back order as possible, so therefore, you know, the initial load is going to be very important when we do these things. Superman, okay.
Yeah. So Superman, Adam, is there a preview slide in there? No, we took that out. No, one of the reasons why, in the earlier roadshow, we explained why the Diamond previews, the catalog that we created and pulled out, why it became late, and it was because we had storylines that we wanted to talk about, but not sort of walk on some of the spoilers that were in the Batman and Superman. So we really took a lot of extra care to take a lot of the material, a lot of the editorial content, and move it away from the Batman and Superman launch window, because in the Superman books, he is not, and he will not. And that is one of the reasons why the DC Universe planet is a rebirth. And so, as we go through it, we're going to do stuff with the Superman family, really broaden the amount of things we do, and I kind of echo a lot of what we did with Superman many years ago, that when he died, if you remember, there was a bunch of other Superman that kind of filled the void, and we're having, you know, see different people kind of challenge or seek the man with Superman. And in this storyline, the last days of Superman, you find out that he knows he's going to die, and he's searching the DC Universe for people, someone who replaces him and take the mantle of being also the ultimate champion of the DC Universe. So when the first chapters go out, they actually say Super League on them. And the plan was by chapter 5, it was the final is a Superman. And then as we go to second printing in the first four chapters, they will also replace with that hanger on top.
Yeah. Back to the preview special for 1 second. Preview special has material in it that hopefully stays and is you can use and hand out all the way through for books all the way through September. August and September. We did the preview special the preview catalog for one particular reason. We wanted to have something for you to hand to your customers, something for them to take away, for them to see, something for them to be able to be aware of what's going on. It's not just about what's in June, it's about what's in June, July, August, and September. We want to be able to have something where people can refer to and get excited about these books on a regular basis. And then also, as Jim was saying, the final day of Superman, the first four parts have gone back for second printings and are horrible right now, so that's something you should be aware of. We also went back and recut the original Death of Superman, so we have volumes of that, which they actually line up pretty nicely with the brand new design of those are available right now. And even with everything you're going to see, it shows that we're doubling down on the Superman character. It's very important to us. As I always like to say, how Superman goes, DC goes. If Superman is working, the rest of the line feels like it's working. So we invested an inordinate amount of time to get these folks correct. Pete Tomasi is doing a brilliant job on the final days of Superman storyline. He rolls right into the first issue of Superman.
Go ahead.
One more time. And then one more. And Dan Jurgens has been doing a wonderful job on the Lois and Clark series, and he's going to be taking over Action Comics, and we're happy to say the numbering of Action Comics is actually going to return back to its original numbering, so therefore you're going to have that highly collectible number, 957, which I find, you know, is going to be something that everybody's going to be just rolling off their lips and excited about, and just saying, you know, listen, Jim was able to make 608 in Batman really collectible, and we're hoping that 957 in Action is going to be getting that same level of success too. So, anyway, a lot of stuff happening here. This is what you can see here. As Jim was saying, we're kind of echo what you saw in the Greatest Superman story. And in this particular book, you're going to notice that Lex Luthor fancies himself to be a Superman too. And that's going to create a little conflict for all the other people who are, you know, claiming the name or throne of Superman. Batman.
So, Batman. The big news here, obviously, is that Scott Snyder is Batman, the Russian shirt. It's not exclusive with DC, he's doing another new Batman project we'll talk about later in the deck. But we really wanted, when we sat down, we really thought about what writers can we approach, and you know, a lot of veterans on the list. But one of the things that we love about Scott coming out of the book was that he was really just kind of at the beginning of his career, just over that book. He really only done the American Vampire. Terrific writer, had a lot of heat, a lot of passion. And we thought, you know what, why not go that route again and see if you can recapture that lightning in the bottle twice. And Tom King was that person. You know, if you've been following the work on the racing, it's really, really great stuff. The stuff he's done for Marvel and Vision, also very critically acclaimed. Fans love what he's doing with it. And he actually sat down with Scott, the friend, the co-wrote the Batman Rebirth issue number one, and they're going to be working closely together because Scott's still in the back office, which he's going to be in the Batman book. And Tom wants something very different from the Dark Knight. It's a breezier, faster-paced story. The first issue, I've done a lot of art here. David Finch is drawn, first issue's done. And you'll see that he's taking a very different approach to the character, but again, introducing new elements into the Batman mythology, which is really, I think, what characterized Scott Snyder's run on the book. He was not scared to add new things and make it seem like these characters have been around, the core bounds have been around for decades, and this is the first time you've seen them. And Tom's taking that same approach. In the first issue, you get to see a new antagonist, and it's actually a hero, a character called Gotham, who's trying to supplant Batman as the hero of Gotham City, and I think it challenges, well, Batman's relationship to the city, and where that talks about that relationship, and I think these are things that work on many, many different levels, and I think reflects kind of the approach he's going to take with the book. It's going to have a lot of action at the top, but then he's going to have a lot of thematic depth and interest, and I think it's going to be really, really exciting.
You know, let's go to our production non-sequitur number one. First one, production non-sequitur number one. This is about the double shifts. Explain what's going on here. So, just give an overview of what the Rebirth line is. We have 17 books that are shipping twice monthly, 15 books that are shipping monthly. Okay? Just for everybody to know. So, and you're going to go, wait a minute, how do you do double shift books? You can barely put out monthly books. They barely come out. Absolutely correct. But one of the things that I'd like to point out to everybody is that we have produced weekly books since 2006. And in every weekly series we've done since 2006, not one book shipped late. Not one. Not one. Zero. Nobody shipped late in weekly comics. You go, wait a minute, weekly comics don't ship late, but monthly comics do. So what's going to happen with twice monthly? Well, as you see multiple names in the art, and you might even see multiple names in writers. The reason why we do that is that we're working on team and community. We're getting writers and artists to work together. And more importantly, they'll be able to pick up the load. So that way, not one person feels the full burden of the book on their shoulders. So there's much more willingness to be able to share titles with people, or more importantly, be able to move things forward. And we spent a lot of time trying to make sure we have matching art styles. And Jim's going to go into this a little bit more when he gets to Suicide Squad. We have matching styles and matching looks, but what we're trying to do is build a sense of community where everybody's working together. And quite honestly, we find ourselves moving better on our schedules because we're shipping twice monthly than we do monthly. Because when you do twice monthly, everybody understands they can't do all the books. When everybody does a monthly book, everybody thinks they're a monthly guy even when they're not. So this allows us to focus and maintain the schedule because, again, it's making that commitment to the fans, making them a commitment to you. If you're expecting a book, you're expecting the money to come in from that book, and you're expecting people to come in stores to buy that book better be there. And we were embarrassed in the month of March when we didn't put out a Justice League book at a time when they had a movie called Superman v. Batman Dawn of Justice. Embarrassing. And we do not want that to happen again. So we were putting a lot of effort, all our effort, to make sure that we could deliver books on time. Because when we launched New 52, every book shipped on time, except for two books that shipped 1 month late. So 52 books over 12 months, everything's one on time. We want to be able to achieve that same goal again. It's important to everybody to make sure that we meet the expectations of the fans and we build that commitment so that when they come into the stores on a regular basis, because we want everybody to come in on a regular basis. That's the goal, is we want you guys to have people coming in every week again and not pushing it off because nothing's going to be there or the book barely ever comes out. So we're recommitting to this, we're recommitting our deadlines, and we're reaffirming with everybody, and we've had people drop out because they can't do that. We've had them drop out, but I think we're better off overall because we have people who are dedicated and focused, and we as a company have been putting more people under contract to make sure that they have no distractions, and that we know all their time and energy is dedicated to DC, the books that they're doing for you. So, that's
it. No. It shifts from this is my book to this is our book, and I want to be part of that. It's kind of a good example. So, there's another slide on Suicide Squad, but with another artist. And what's interesting about it is that that recreative team is tackling that challenge of how to put out a twice monthly book for a different number of artists. You'll see that everyone's kind of doing something a little slightly different. And so it's very creative, so it's really cool. And so I think it really, people build up the challenge of it. And then you're like, oh, well, I'm not going to have my collection of just my issues. I think everyone looking at it, hey, this is a story we're telling with the entire team. And the trades are going to reflect the entire team's efforts.
Detective is also returning to its original numbering, the 934. James Petty did a wonderful job with the weekly series for Batman Eternal, Batman Robin Eternal. He understands those characters, he's brought them all together in a single book. This is what we're calling Batman Moon Year. Batman Training Day. Basically, it's Batman and Batman work together as a team, training all the younger characters that have in Gotham City in order to become better heroes. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun, especially when you bring characters like Clayface into the mix. Aquaman, you love this one. You do love this one. Come on. It's been a chapter.
Right. Aquaman, it's Game of Thrones under water. That's what I was saying. And, I think raising the importance of Mera and really restarting that relationship that was the hallmark of the book, New 52.
Yeah, I mean, really, in some ways, it's Aquaman and a Mera book. That's the way this has been played. It's going to be a great story to get to between the two of them. And actually comes out, what's happening in that series actually comes out of the Rebirth special as well. The Flash.
Yeah, so The Flash. This is...
He never writes the little lines. I just become a comic
book. Before jumping into this one, let me say, speaking of non-sequiturs, Retailers have asked in the prior show, so after we do all this, thing, well, what is Rebirth? And I think we're dropping the hints as we go through. It's not a reboot. It's focused on story and character. But a big part of it is, as Dan said, Jeff's involved in the books. He comes in, and he's pulled back on his own monthly writing chores. And he's spending hours, countless hours with the editorial teams and different writers to bring them in from out of town. He sits down with them and he really deconstructs the characters down to their fundamental DNA. What makes these characters tick, why they're different from one another, and what makes them unique and special. And it's a very interesting creative exercise, but I think it gets down to what I think Dan was alluding to before, is that sometimes the creators kind of they go off on different paths, and before you know it, you've got a Green Lantern that's a mass murderer, you've got a Green Lantern Corps that's dismantled, and Jeff wants to go back and go, well, you know what, you've destroyed all the things that made these things unique and special, and in his own way, it kind of restores them back to their full glory. And so, something like this, he really sat down with the writer, Josh Williamson, and said, is there a storyline that we can do that reinforces what makes the Flash unique and special? But it's also a cool storyline here in itself. And what Josh pitched was the idea that the Speed Force storm is hitting Central City and it's striking lots of people. And some of these people use their powers for good, a lot of use for bad. But then the Speed Force hits one person with a serial killer, and that's when the story starts. So what's interesting about that story is I think it really kind of you see Jeff's handiwork in this because the story in and of itself now shows you that the Flash, Barry Allen, is not this great hero just because he has the ability to run fast. What you're going to see through the story is that he is a great hero because of who he is. The powers are a side part of his greatness. Because you're going to see all these other characters get the Speed Force and they're using it for different purposes and they're not going to measure up to Barry Allen. So I think that storyline, A, it shows you why the Flash is unique and special about it, even though they're giving all the other people the same power. And then A, gives you this really cool storyline where all the speedsters are running around and the Flash has to beat them all. And it really kind of shows you the stakes that are super high. And it's a great storyline and I really, really think it's going to be a great album.
Green Lanterns. This one was that, again, we wanted to change it. This one was wanted to change up a little bit because of any character that has different characters rotating through the title book. Green Lantern's been one of them, and all of them pretty much stay true to what the core conceit is. So we're introducing not one but two Green Lanterns in this book, brand new Green Lantern and Jessica Cruz. She was introduced in the Dark Side War storyline. Character powering as a Green Lantern range. She's also joined by Simon Bass. What's fun about this book is that it's a team book in its own sense because it's set and takes place on Earth, which we haven't done much Green Lantern on Earth for a while. And this is good in the sense that it really does that. And again, feeding back to what I talked about before, one of the key adversaries for the Green Lanterns here are going to be the Red Lanterns. The Red Lanterns are supposedly controlling our sector. We have two new Green Lanterns on Earth. So naturally, there seems to be a lot of conflict of who's in charge of what. So we're getting a great storyline that brings back a lot of the color core ideas, which we think is still one of the true highlights of the Green Lantern storyline. We got two new Green Lanterns here to tell the story with. And what's important about these Green Lanterns is that they're not an island unto themselves. These Green Lanterns will also be featured in the Justice League book, which I think is very important because, again, it shows that connective tissue between titles and reinforces these characters, the Green Lantern and Earth. And also what it does, too, it starts to bring the Justice League franchise back into the DC Universe, which it hasn't been for a while. So again, I feel the storylines are lining up in a way that I think you've seen the universe coming together. We've got two new great characters in here, and I think this is going to bring a lot of fun. Again, in the past, what did we do? We did a Green Lantern book, we did a Red Lantern book, we did a Sinestro book, we did a Larkleys book. We kept on diluting our brand or the story. Now what we're saying is that you've got a main Green Lantern book twice a month, but those crazy ideas are now going to start to come into here again, where they were most successful. The Red Lanterns became successful in the Green Lantern storyline. That's how this is going to work. We want to reinforce all the interesting concepts back in the books again, so we don't dilute the pool and put all of our energy on the double shifts to keep them as exciting as possible. Green Arrow. Say it.
It's a return that being a
good it's a return of the goatee, that's all it is. Goatee back.
He mentioned in the first issue. It is a book that focuses on that relationship between Green Arrow and Black Canary, a relationship that was really neglected or overwritten in the 52. There's an explanation for it. But you see him kind of go back to his roots of being a social avenger and being sort of extremely liberal. Who is trying to right wrong, and so it's a great series by Benjamin Percy. Schmidt does the art, it's fantastic. Black Mirror never looked better, and again, it builds off the New 52. But you're going to see those subtle overtures, return elements that were previous 52 return in this book.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we were talking about before. There were so many changes made to Green Arrow that it saw a scene to lost its way. We had a number of team changes. And some people like one interpretation, another, but we shouldn't have multiple interpretations in story arcs. We should have consistency. And one of the things we realize is that when you talk about Green Arrow, what do you hear the most? Social warrior, Black Canary, goatee. Seriously. Even before they mention arrows, they mention those three things. Okay? So if that's the case, you want to get back and put the things in that book that people want to see and recognize, but hopefully tell the stories in a way they haven't seen them before. We don't want this to be a feeling that we're just going backwards. Worst thing in the world for us. Worst thing in the world for everybody. Because what happens if we look like we're going backwards, people are going to walk in the store, see the material, say, I read it already, I've been there, I don't need it. So what we got to do is give you those tastes of what looks familiar, what you make feel comfortable with, and then take that and push them into new directions that people want to follow. So we're putting a lot of things that are very familiar in these first arcs, reinforcing them, repositioning them, and then moving them forward from there. Wonder Woman.
All right. This is the return of Greg Rucka back to DC. Huge, huge news. Dan had to go to great lengths to bring it back. He was like dropping behind enemy lines and crawling through mud to get to Greg's house and deliver gifts. I'll get to be excited about it, not just Greg's return, but the fact that we're pairing up with an artist, Ian Sharp. Again, when you think about the success we've had with Batman, partnering up Scott Snyder with an artist that had really never done any work for DC before, the current Pluto, and you really saw the energy and the magic that happened from that pairing. Ian Sharp is a guy that drew a lot of problems and values and dropped out and co-founded a digital reading app called Madefire. But he's kind of really never lost the desire to draw. And he and I have been keeping contact for many years. And finally, I said, look, you should draw the Wonder Woman. He loves drawing that kind of person, that very detailed, mythologically inspired artwork. Super rendered, but at the same time, it's very measured. He doesn't go too overboard, really rendered, not to over-render things. So it's got a lot of detail, but at the same time, a lot of thought and composition built in. His take on the character is amazing. He's also working with another fantastic artist named Nicola Scott. Nicola and Greg have been talking about doing a Wonder Woman Year One story for a bit, I think almost 10 years. And so Greg created this amazing story where the stuff that's happening in contemporary times is drawn by Liam. And then every other issue is a flashback issue, which would be Wonder Woman Year One, that I would assume echoes what's happening in the present. So there's a through line that goes between the present and the past. And the whole drawing the stuff in the past. And he's really using the contrast between the two artist styles, and the fact that he's written twice monthly, and he has to use two different artists in a way that's really novel and interesting, and I think it's just gonna really, this is gonna be a great album.
Yeah, and Reduction on Second number two. Again, what we did here is a little different than the other books, and we let the creator teams choose how to tell their stories, meaning that Greg felt very comfortable finding a way to split the story between two artists, between Nicola telling that year one story and Liam doing the other story, and they are tied together, but it's a different way to do a double shift. It'll feel like two separate stories and actually be collected as two separate stories. Okay? So in this case, it's going to be a little different than the other ones, but what we like about it is that it's a creative solution to the double shifts, and it mixes it up a little bit differently. So that way, not every book is going to have the same cadence of things. They're not all going to be rushing through 6 part stories every 6 months. The way it's going to work is that we're going to let them tell their own stories. We're going to be dropping in 2 part fill-ins in places. We'll have crossovers probably in places. But we'll have different things occurring to keep this on schedule. So it's not just 3 months, 6 parts, 3 months, 6 parts, 3 months, 6 parts. Every book should have its own cadence, its own way of rolling out, and let the stories dictate the length more so than just a story arc. One of the problems we're always faced with is that when people are telling 6 part stories, they tend to extend or overwrite things in order to make them last for 6 issues, even if they might be just enough story for 4. So we want to give everybody some flexibility, and because we have to use multiple artists, we're finding creative solutions, so it's actually shortening some stories and lengthening stories at the same time. Titans. Now here we are, we're going to look at the Titans in case, because we have Titans Hunt right now, which is a book being written by Dan Abnett, and Dan Abnett is actually going to be doing Titans Rebirth. When we did the 52 launch, this generation of characters seemed to have gotten a little bit of a short rift. Now that Troy wasn't part of it, Holly West wasn't part of it, Aqualad wasn't part of it, a lot of these characters that a lot of people grew up on felt they were missing, and that's something we heard over and over again, and we tried to slowly reintroduce them back into the line, but the reality is they wanted to see these characters in a certain way. So in this story, we're finding a way to, in the storytelling, and not a reboot, not a relaunch, we got to say that over and over again, not a reboot, we're finding a way in our storytelling to move these characters back to a position where people can feel familiar with it. It's something that actually ties in very tightly to the DC Universe Rebirth special, and one of the major storylines of that will spill into this series, which is very important to us, and a lot of great stuff happening here, and again, Titans is a key franchise for us, and we want to make sure it feels like a key franchise between this and Teen Titans, and we're hoping that people will really buy into what we got planned here. Batgirl and Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey is also in the other series that we had a lot of conversation about, a lot of interest in, so we wanted to get this book back in a strong way. We've got two new great writers coming to us from the world of television, doing The 100 with Julie and Sean Benson. And in this series, we're also reintroducing a key element to the Birds of Prey idea. You know, we did launch the 52 with Birds of Prey book. This is a new series. We're bringing Batgirl to the front and putting her name on it because of the success of that character. But we're also bringing back a big mystery here about the character of Oracle. There's an Oracle in the Gotham now. It's creating havoc for the Birds of Prey, and their job is to find out who this is and why they're doing what they want. So again, it's a conceit and concept that people remember from the early Birds of Prey books, and hopefully with a bigger mystery now that'll pull them in and stay with the series.
Alright. And that has actually the previous book has more Batgirl in more traditional superhero stories. But we also want to preserve what made Batgirl break out in that was by giving in her own book more creative freedom for them to tell the stories they want to tell that aren't necessarily driven by big splash pages and big fight sequences. This is written by Hope Larson and drawn by Rafael Albuquerque. He is doing some of the best work of his career, and it's essentially the story of her hitting the road and going to Southeast Asia to kind of find her identity. And it's really interesting. Again, the storyline mirrors and shows you what makes the character special. And she runs into, I think it's called Fruit Bat or some character like that. Some crazy Japanese version of the Batgirl. This woman is like 100 and some odd years old. And she basically teams up with this character, and they finally have a lot in common. So even as she goes and backpacks around the world, she finds trouble. And it's something that I think really plays to the strength of this character, that it is often trying to do different things with this character that hasn't been done with a lot of other DC Universe characters. So we have very high hopes for this.
Take a look at the Green Lantern side. You know, we know that Hal is still the most recognizable and popular Green Lantern, so we wanted to build a second Green Lantern book and bring back all the other key Green Lanterns. So you get to see Kyle Rayner, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, all working with Hal. I think you've got some of the more fun stories with Hal's character. He's probably more at odds with them than Ziggy with them, and also we're bringing a lot of the story beats from Sinestro in here too. Again, so Red Lanterns in the Green Lanterns book, Sinestro Corps and the Green Lantern Corps, getting back to a lot of the strength of what this franchise is about, and a lot of the more recognizable characters in there. And we're hoping that this really helps rebuild that key franchise for us. You know, there was a point there where Green Lantern was the number 2 seller behind Batman. And, you know, we're hoping to get back to a position where he is actually a leader again and the leader of the franchise. That's why we want to make sure these two books had all the best things working for it. So that way, if anybody was a fan of the Green Lanterns, they're ready to buy these books. Oh, by the way, even it's got a back on art, which is pretty damn exciting. What do you think?
So Justice League, we have Brian Hitch working with Tony Daniel, and this is Tony's dream book for the DC Universe. This is the book he always wanted to do, and he had to go around with Deathstroke and Superman, Wonder Woman, and all the other books before Batman, before he had an opportunity to do this. But as you can tell, he nails it. I mean, you need someone that can draw all the characters and make them all look good. And side by side, and Brian's really giving him the creative freedom to tell very epic stories. I think that's something they need for Justice League, given all their powers. They need really epic cosmic things to do. There's a lot of photocopies of the art in the back, and as you see that Tony was just tearing it up. It's just really, really impressive work. And you can see, he really kind of focused on Wonder Woman a lot. He actually did the design of the costume, obviously inspired from some of the local characters in the movies itself.
A new Superman, Jim Yang was the writer on Superman. He's an award-winning writer, and honestly, we wanted to really expand the Superman franchise. And I think I said this before, I'll say it again. This is the first time, I believe, where there's probably more Superman product than Batman product in a weird way, it seems. At least it's feeling that way to us. And that's a good thing, because we really wanted to make sure Superman was as strong as possible. We also wanted to introduce new ideas, new conceits in it. And this is basically a young kid in China who's actually not a nice kid. And he's put through an experiment, and given his extraordinary powers that were based on Superman's powers, and he finds himself to be the Superman for China, and start first he uses the powers in ways that probably isn't reflective of the character itself, but then as he starts to exist and realize what's happened to him, what's changed him, even his own personality starts to change along with it, and he starts to understand the importance of being a Superman and starts to rise to the occasion. So this is wonderful character development and character arc, which we find also is a way to really expand out and broaden the Superman universe.
And I think Gene purposely decided to mirror kind of the evolution of Superman. If you look at the Golden Age Superman, he's very brash, he's kind of selfish, and isn't this paramount of altruism that he eventually becomes. And he very much wants to reflect that in the evolution of his character. I think the opening scene is, a kid, you see this little kid being bullied by a big bully and says, "I'm Superman," and then close in on the kid that's being bullied and says, "This is not me." Then to the bully and say, "This is me." And I think it's just a very different time to start for a character like Superman. And they're having a lot of fun, and they're introducing a lot of other Asian Chinese superheroes and villains to this book as well.
Yeah, I think also one of the things you get to keep an eye on this book too. We don't have the Wizard magazine anymore telling us it's not. We're keeping an eye on Victor's artwork. We think he's exceptional, and we think he's going to be a breakout going forward. I think he's got a great book here too. I still can't get over it. He's back in a blue costume. Is that enough to sell a book? What do you think? Is that enough? Just the fact he's wearing blue again? We asked the writers, can you write blue? We had to interview so many people and see who could write blue. And, we've had everybody come to us and say, the first story arc is, I gotta get Diamond back in his blue costume. And for the life of me, I couldn't have to figure out why, or why that was for, but what it is that connection. People grew up with Dick Grayson. People recognize him in that blue costume. It's part of their lives. And that change left them uneasy, so we're back in blue. But it's not just not being back in blue, but back in costume. It's taking up some of the themes and storylines from Grayson itself, building those stories forward, but it's also, we're taking that key theme that's coming out of the Robin War, which is basically now Dick Grayson is beholden to the Court of Owls. And because of that, he gets a new mentor. And a new mentor is going to basically try to retrain him to be someone else. And we're going to find out how much his Batman training holds or how much the new mentor has control over him. So it's really an exploration of who he is and his own identity between two great teachers, or two great teachers, one good and the other one not so good. But really, who is he in the middle and who is he going to be? And really, who is he at the heart of the character? And I think Tim's really, really embracing the whole concept of Dick Grayson. They've done a wonderful job on the Grayson book, and actually, we're very excited about it. Very excited.
Another book that you can really see the fingerprints that Jeff sort of created boot camp training, in that when he sat down and spoke with Tim, they were saying, we don't really have a rose gallery for Nightwing. And she's based on Joker. She created his version of Joker, and then he realized Joker works great for Batman because he reflects the chaos of Batman's own madness. For a character like Nightwing, who was the first sidekick and has always been the mentee, the one that's always been training, the ultimate sort of antagonist would be a mentor, a different mentor. And as Dan was saying, it's only the Court of Owls. So again, they created a villain and they created a story that underscores essentially what makes this character unique and special. The fact that he's a sidekick, he's always been trained by someone else, and now he's got his arch nemesis who's trying to train him in a different way, and how does he respond to that? I think that's what makes this book unique.
Also, Batman, this is all.
Yeah, so also Batman. So this is where Scott Snyder lands. Never fear, he's still around. This is a monthly book. This is a $4.99 book, so this is not a $2.99 book. But it's called All Star Batman, not because they wanted to give me crap. It reflects really the line of artists that got out of the book itself. People like John Reader Jr., Jock, Sean Murphy, and two little takes from it. So he's basically, Scott really wants to reinvent the entire Rose Gallery with a series of stories that looks at the villains and redefines them in different stories. So the first story is a road trip where Batman and Two-Face go cross country the whole time trying to accomplish something. And meanwhile, Two-Face being Two-Face is trying to backstab and undermine the whole thing behind Batman's back as the whole adventure. So this is launching in August, and obviously it's going to have tremendous heat. And we're really kind of tailoring this project to what Scott envisioned. I mean, he wanted to work with all these great artists, and each artist to work on a specific villain, and then use that opportunity to really reimagine these villains through the reading.
Yeah, and also what's going to happen is that as he pushes the villains through his storytelling, we're going to find ways to work them in through the rest of the DC Universe as well. Again, as he does it, so there'll be a lot of connective tissue between All-Star Batman and the other regular Batman books and detective panels. Blue Beetle. Okay, this is a storyline that's also set up briefly in the DC Universe Rebirth Special. But it's key that we've had split factions in regards to when we look at the character Blue Beetle. So we try to think the best of all worlds and bring him into one title. We're bringing the Hanging Rays character back into his own series, but this time it's being mentored by Ted Kord, which I think is, makes it a lot of fun with it. And there's going to be this great relationship between the two of them, him learning from Ted, but also we're going to see great iconic bits like the Beetle Bug, the giant Beetle Bug wagon again. And then also there's going to be some other key characters coming in here. Characters like Dr. Fate and something like that, deeply ingrained in the DC Universe. But again, it's something where we want to really have some fun with it. He is really enjoying it, and Scott Collins is just doing a wonderful job on the art. Deathstroke, the thinking man's killer, right?
Yeah, we've heard about Christopher Reeve in the DC.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that Christopher really is looking into the family aspect of Deathstroke. And it's really an introspective, strangely enough, I'm going to say it's an introspective comic book with a lot of deep thought and a lot of mayhem and killing. So I think we cover the really broadest spectrum of storytelling in this thing. Christopher Priest is a really incredible storyteller. We're really happy to have him back at DC Comics again. And he's embraced his character and he's making it his own. And like I said, I think one of the things that makes fun about it is that he's actually building out Deathstroke's role. So it's not just about Deathstroke, you know, moving through other people's lives, but more about his life, which I think grounds it and makes it a better book. Harley Quinn.
Yeah, so Harley Quinn, you know, Amanda and Jay have done an amazing job of taking this character and making it probably number three best-selling book. So, of course, of that publishing line, they're going to continue sort of the dark comedy, breaking the fourth wall attitude that they have in their book, making their book kind of different and unique. And just kind of a lot of fun with it. That said, we are also doing Harley Quinn, we're showcasing Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad as well. What's the next slide?
Next slide.
No. Okay. So that's the first cover. I think that's new.
I think it's the first time you see the first cover.
Right. So, so like I said, Jimmy and Amanda have Harley Quinn in her book. They're going to focus on her and her supporting cast. And I'm going to explore that a little bit more. Spent a lot of time with it. They realized they struck a chord. They found an audience that wants something different. They're going to keep doing that. But Suicide Squad will have Harley Quinn more in a traditional superhero role as a member of the Suicide Squad. It's being written by Rob Williams, who writes The Fallout and Martian Manhunter. I'm going to draw by myself on Philip Tan. And Philip Tan is local in LA, and he and I get together about once every 2 weeks and we'll Ray off of him, so he's working on pages of his, but you're going to see my influence working with him in terms of competition and storytelling. And we're really working together to make sure that the visuals are as seamless as possible. At the end of the day, we love working on this book just because you're seeing, we have the opportunity to use characters that really aren't well-known characters to try to elevate them. And the characters could die, and that's really gives the story a bit of gravity that other books in the DC might not have. And I think, in fact, people should have that as part of the premise of it. And Rob has done an amazing job. The first issue ends with either Doomsday, Mrs. or Zod joining the team.
Everyone on the group corrected, so feel free to correct us on that Mexico as well. Hellblazer. Again, getting back to the core concepts of this, we really want to get back to the darker tone that people are very familiar with during the Vertigo days. Again, it has a darker edge, still plays within the DCU. The very first arc will be featuring Swamp Thing, and it will be taking a journey with Swamp Thing. And John Constantine have to team up to save the soul of Abby Arcane, which I think is a lot of fun. Again, a lot of key ideas, a lot of key franchise bits that I think are very familiar with people, and you know, we're hoping that if people see Swamp Thing and Constantine again, they're going to want to pick up that book. Right at the elbow.
What's interesting about this book is that it pairs Greg Hood with Bizarro and Artemis, and really think about those characters. They are all the has-beens, the also-rans of the prospective families. Bizarro's almost Superman. Greg Hood was the Robin that failed. Artemis was the Wonder Woman that got kicked off with Venice and Island. So it's interesting to take all those types of characters and put them in a team together, because then the team itself, again, resonates and underscores who these characters are and what makes them special. They're broken versions of the archetypes that we know and love. It allows you to do very different types of stories. It's being held by Scott Lobdell. He's worked very closely with Jeff on this as well. And they're going to do some stuff I think that's going to be a lot of fun and very different from what you would expect in a team of bookers.
Supergirl. This is, you know, this is a book that everybody's been asking for. And honestly, one of the things we want to do is we want to get it right. That was very important to us. We want to make sure that the Supergirl series had the same dynamic energy that the show has, but also the same dynamic energy the Batgirl series had, and the same voice and tone. So we brought in the writer Steve Orlando. He's working with Brian Ching and Emmanuel Lopuccino, and they've crafted a series that feels very familiar to if you're watching the Supergirl show, but stands on its own. It's its own book, it's its own idea, and I think he has a great voice for the character, and I'm hoping that this book is as successful as we think it will be. We think it's going to be a breakout for us, and hopefully a breakout for you too. The interest in this character has never been higher, and we want to make sure that if anybody's looking for anything Supergirl-related, you can direct them to this particular book. Superwoman, which is a brand new character, but a familiar character. I think everybody's already found out that the story starts with Lois Lane as Superwoman, and the story then takes some crazy, unusual terms, but there's a lot of fun, weird storytelling going on in the Superman's world right now. The Superwoman book's right in the center of it, you know, and what's even more important than just having a Superwoman series is the fact that Phil Jimenez is back at DC. Phil, you know, just like Greg, Phil is so integral to so many great moments in DC Comics. It's great to have him back, both as a writer and an artist. Emmanuel Lopuccino is also taking time working on this series as well. So there's a lot of fun stuff happening here. And again, it shows you the breadth of the Superman world as we have all these different books coming to the source. Cyborg. Can I do something? Yes, sir. Yeah, I'll do something. Okay, Cyborg. Again, this is going to be a key character in the Justice League franchise, so it's very important for us to make sure that we put the best team possible on this. Writer on board here is a guy that I've worked with and know from animation. His name's John Semper. John was the story editor of the Spider-Man animated series during the 90s, which I think everybody seems to identify as one of the better Spider-Man series of all time. And he was there. He's worked on book shows like Static Shock. He's dabbled in comics. This is his first foray into it. And he's really delving into the heart of the character to it. He's going to deal with social issues on this book, but he also wants to really explore that balance between man and machine and how people are losing themselves to the inhumanity of the machine being played out within the single character here. The other thing which is very important on this too, just like Jim was saying with Nightwing, we want to build a rogues gallery here. These are characters that have been around for 30, 40 years, and there's no recognizable characters for them to interact with or have somebody to fight against. So it's very important for us to build recurring characters, recurring universes, so these characters have the same, you know, base in supporting cast members and villains as all our other great characters. Teen Titans. This is one of those books that has frustrated us. This is a book that we've been trying to really get right, and we just seem to make little mistakes along the way. So we really want to spend an enormous amount of time to get this one right again. So sitting down with Ben Hersey, off by John Boyd Myers. This is a storyline that sort of starts in the Rebirth Special, just touched upon very, very briefly. So, but it's a story that really plays into the DC Universe. And Non Sequitur, publishing Non Sequitur number 3. September books, you see September books. Why are you seeing books launching later in September? You might even see some October. That's because they're coming out of different storylines. The goal is that stories lead to stories. So that things aren't just thrown out there, cold, sit on the table, hope somebody find it. If they don't, they get lost. We want to spend the time to build this right. So this is going to come out of a major storyline, featuring some of the other characters in the DC Universe. But the goal is here is really for Damian to basically become the leader of the Teen Titans and recraft the team for what he feels is a weapon of his choice. So it's a rather interesting take of things there. A lot of things are going to be moving and shaking in the Teen Titans world, but when you see a September or something like that, that means that we have a story that's going to be coming, it's coming from another storyline. So again, we're trying to build this universe slowly. Again, Night Century number 5, I think we're on 5. When we launched New 52, we launched 52 series at the same time. Everybody was nervous, almost on the ones all at the same time, and they didn't know how to order things of that nature. Well, what we've done is that we spread out our number ones. So we have number ones in June, July, August, September, and possibly October. And the reason why we did that is for you to get a sense of the rhythm and cadence of Rebirth. So therefore, you're not doing this crazy bet at the beginning of 52 books, not sure where it's going to go. Hopefully in the beginning, with the May 25th book and the June books, you get a sense of how Rebirth is going to unfold, and that will inform you on how to hopefully order better for the following series. So we heard that complaint, we listened to it, and we changed our schedule and how we launched these series and rolled out the series to better accommodate what works best for you in order. So hopefully this works to your advantage, hopefully this does, but if Rebirth works as well as we can do, what that also gives us is a prolonged promotion and support for the Rebirth name over 7 months with new number ones. So if people are buying into Rebirth, they have cause to come back for more new series over and over again. And hopefully, once they're there, they stick around. So they're just not coming back for them. They come for the number ones, but they stay for the number twos, we always say, right? So here you go.
Trinity, well, obviously, in the wake of Batman and Superman, one that really focused on these three characters, really spotlight how different they are from one another, but ultimately why they need to be together, how they show up each other's weaknesses or blind spots, and then they just a fun book centered on the three main characters in the DC Universe. Francis Venable is a creative beast. I love his work. His ingenuity, the way he innovates layouts and the way he approaches his work is really, really fun. And I think it just shows you the fundamental appeal of comics, the ability to tell stories and panels and art, and he does it so well. And so, to me, this is just an awesome, awesome book. And it's going to be working out with upcoming artist Clay Mann, who is fresh off the Brooklyn movies.
Beyond again, we're returning back to Portman Seas. We've had some success in the Batman Beyond series here right now, but again, one of the pieces that's been missing, we're returning back to it. So we're actually putting Terry McGinnis back in the costume as part of the overall story that's going on in Batman Beyond. So it's still building on the world and storyline that exists in this, what we have taken right now in New 52, but moving forward, Terry McGinnis will be the new Batman, new old Batman Beyond. And again, the good part, and what I think is important to know, is that story beats in Batman Beyond are actually echoes of things that are happening in the DC Universe. So you're going to see things happening in the main part of the line, and here said in the near future with Batman Beyond, you'll see how those beats play out several years in the future. Super Sons. Super Sons is possibly my favorite book. Possibly my favorite book. Now that it's that beautiful art from Jorge Jimenez, but this is where I always ask everybody, did anybody ever read the old World's Finest Super Sons comics? Anybody? Okay. You gotta admit, there's always a couple. Those stories were terrible, weren't they? Right? But do you remember them fondly, right? Yeah. And that's just the way it is. Why do you remember fondly? Because there's something exciting and enjoyable about the idea of Batman's son and Superman's son working side by side, complaining about their superpower parents. And we want to get that same fun and excitement. We want to get that high adventure. For me, this is a book of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn with superpowers. And I think if it captures all the energy we want it to be, and we're keeping some of the people involved a little bit of a secret right now, so we want to roll that out a little bit later. But again, there's a lot of fun adventure in here because I think there's a lot of heart in the book. And I think that's something that we're going to hear over and over again, is that we want to get the heart of those characters, relatability of those characters, the warmth of those characters, something that people make them want to read from month to month. Suicide. Justice League America. You can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we put this slide up there just to fill out the slate, because if we say there's 17 double shifts and 15 monthly books and you counted everything up, you always come up one short. There is going to be a second Justice League book. It's coming up later in the year. We can't talk about it because naturally, as I was saying before, September usually means it's coming out of something else. In this particular case, the Justice League itself, the team that assembles here, comes out of other storylines and brings them together. Not that it's a big crossover, so even though crossover itself, we seem like that's a dirty word, but there's something here that happens that basically feeds a lot of characters into this book and becomes a series unto itself. And there are threads inside the DC Universe special that actually will be told in the Justice League book later this year. Again, the goal here, because we're double shipping, because we have so many series, is not to play all your cards at the beginning. You know, we play all the cards in that first arc, and then we have nothing left for the second and third arc. That's what caused our problems with New 52. So what we're doing is we want to pace ourselves, take our time, establish the characters, rebuild their core sensibilities, rebuild their worlds, rebuild their supporting cast, rebuild their rogue spaces, and then find ways to bring them together for bigger stories as we go forward and create an interactive universe that, again, has been taken from us. I mean, if you think about it, you look at film, you look at TV. Their success is based on interactive universes, shared worlds, you know? And ultimately, what happens there is that they've taken what we've done and made it successful for them. And we've walked away from our core strength, which is a shared universe. And we're getting back to that again. Because I think that's what people want to see in the comics. Because that's what they want to see in the movies and television shows. And in some ways, those shows and movies, we're in competition with them. I look at the TV shows more competition with DC Comics than I do Marvel. Strangely. Because why? Because they're telling our stories. You know, when you look in there, we did a whole analysis, and I was mentioning this to a couple of guys in the back before. You know, you look at the headlines and all the websites and all the places. You know, Flash beats Supergirl. You know, Ra's al Ghul fights Arrow. You know, villains rise in Gotham. Those are our stories. And they're getting all the press. And our stories aren't getting any attention at all. Because comics don't drive traffic in digital land as much as movies and TV shows. So the only way we're going to drive interest and excitement in what we do is through you. We've got to get excited about what's in our book. You've got to be reading our books. You want to know what's happening next. And you've got to bring that conversation up so that it's not just about what show they watched on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. There's a lot of TV out there, a lot of movies out there. I got to get people talking about comics again. We don't want our comics to feel like licensed characters from movies and TVs. We are the beginning. We are the start. We are the inspiration. And we've got to remind people of that. And the only way we can do that is tell stories that are different and exciting. And we got to be first with them. You know, we want to inspire other creators to tell stories with our characters. You know, the other way around is okay, but it's not our business for long term. We've got to be important and unique, and we've got to keep periodicals exciting and vibrant. And this is what this is about, and this is what we're trying to drive again. We've got to make ourselves important. We've got to make the periodicals important. We've got to make people want to come back to your stores every Wednesday or every day of the week because that's what they want to see. They want to see. They don't care about the shows. They want to read these things. They want to enjoy these. So it's important for us to connect again and make sure we hold them with the compelling storytelling. And we're making that big commitment to that right now. And that is Rebirth.
I think you can see that Jim and Dan are pretty excited about what DC Rebirth has in store. The big special goes on sale tomorrow, the 25th, Wednesday the 25th, $2.99 for 80 pages. I don't know if you're going to find a better value out there right now for your dollar. We'll have lots of copies available, so please stop in and pick one up if you're at all interested in what the DC line is going to be doing here over the next year or two. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. So if you have any questions or comments about what you heard either in this episode or any of the previous, or just general questions, you can send us an email at podcast@cowabungacomics.com. You can visit us online at www.cowabungacomics.com, cowabunga spelled with a K. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow or on Twitter at IncrediCow. We hope you enjoyed this special recorded session from the DC Retailer Roadshow, and we'll be back with you shortly with another episode.